You're listening to Christina's Room podcast, a place where startup founders, entrepreneurs, and executives can find inspiration from me and other founders to grow awesome businesses and fulfill their dreams. My name's Christina Imre, and I coach VC-backed startup founders and mission-oriented leaders thrive in business and life. Welcome, everyone, to my special episode with Hollywood celebrity James Pratt, who just won his third Best Actor Award for this year only with his featured film Malibu Crush at the recent Los Angeles Film Awards in Hollywood. This comes after winning Best Actor at Beyond Hollywood International Film Festival in May and the New York Movie Awards in April of this year. Now, James Pratt is a complex personality, not only as an award-winning actor, but also director, producer, screenwriter, celebrity favorite within luxury auctioneering internationally, the CEO of the James Pratt Auctions Group, board member for several film festivals, including ESPY Awards New York and iHollywood Film Festival, and founding member in Mogul Productions. He became the first person in the world to auction live real estate using cryptocurrency. This happened in 2019. James was named Australia's top five under 35 in 2019 and by the Next Rush magazine. I could continue on and on, but let me welcome James to Christina's Room business podcast dedicated to founders, entrepreneurs, and change makers who are bringing our world into the future. Welcome, James.
Thank you very much. I was going to say, you've definitely done some research because some of those things I haven't really thought about for a while. So thank you very much for the nice introduction. And really good research.
Thank you for acknowledging this. And also because I always do my research, it's a sign of respect when you want someone on your podcast to know that person. And I just wondering why other podcasters don't do that, some, because I noticed this and most of my guests are very amazed by the same thing. And I'm amazed that they are amazed. So thank you. I appreciate this. For me, this is normal. To set the stage to my audience, who might be a little bit wondering, or it could be intrigued, why a Hollywood star is here on my podcast, is exactly because of this complex personality. And so a little bit of background, I just saw your podcast on Joanne Chen podcast, who is a good friend of mine. The podcast is called Joy with Joanne. So please check it out because she has great episodes there. And I love that episode with you, James, because you mentioned several times the word growth, also development, and how important is this for you to go through struggles and take them as a learning curve. And so I said, wow. Then we connected and you were also very approachable and kind. And approachability is one of the main leadership skills. And I always appreciate this in someone. So it's obvious that you have something special. And I said that you would fit very well with my audience, also from a different perspective, coming from a different world, but also to discuss a little bit more about growth mindset and success mindset, because I'm sure that you have a lot of gems to share with my audience. Let's start easy. Why acting?
You know, I didn't really get into acting until I'd finished high school. And I think that was more just, to be very honest with you, why acting and why at that point? It's probably just because I think your sphere of influence is very, very important. And my sphere of influence growing up was very much the beach, sport, a whole range of things that were away from the creative side. And then obviously, you know, you finish high school. I was just about to turn 18. And you think differently, you're in a different environment. And I enjoy the idea of being able to get out of this world and go into another world, I guess, playing a character. And the other half of it is just, I love telling stories. I think stories, there's not enough good stories in the world at the moment. And people have stories, they just don't tell them.
And you also did, you were into sports, right? You were in competitions. Yeah. And you did it pretty well during high school. So please tell me a little bit about this, because I saw association between sports competition and especially competitive sports that are connected to success and the growth mindset.
Well, I think there's that, and there's also the difference between a team sport and an individual sport. And I think that's also something to kind of dive deep into. For example, you know, obviously if you're playing tennis or golf or surfing, that's very individual. But if you're playing basketball, volleyball, or soccer, it's like it's a team-orientated sport. So I think both of those, team sport or not a team sport, have a great role to play. You know, you develop skills like being obviously competitive, you know, pushing yourself, structure, routine, all of those type of things. And I guess probably to sum up your question, you know, the kind of sports that I was doing in growing up in Australia is very Australian sports. So, you know, like tennis and surfing and swimming and basketball. So they're very, I think, you know, lucky to be able to play sports like that and develop skills early on, helps later in life.
And you were born in Sydney, correct?
I was born in Sydney, yes.
But then you moved to Outback Australia. And here, I would love your storytelling part here to explain us all over the world what that means and how it looks like to be there in isolation. And during which period of your life you were there?
Yeah, that was quite a character building time out there. Just because it was so different, and there was like, it was just a very unique situation because I'd finished high school and I just finished studying both NIDA, and I also studied business and real estate at the same time, because my parents growing up were like, you know, they were sort of like, you know, being an actor, that's fantastic, but you know, we'd really feel like you'd be better off studying business at the same time, which was kind of like hint for like the industry is very small in Australia. So yeah, I kind of ended up after finishing both of those, I was in this very small rural town, and my parents and my, you know, most of my family, and they sort of started to move to America. So it was almost like I was in this very isolated area. And, you know, if there was any branches, you could say they were the other side of the world. And it was great. It was very sink or swim. And I, you know, obviously am not from the country, but to experience that lifestyle and the aspects to way that people live their life out there, the way you can have an appreciation for things that you'd never think you would, such as, you know, companionship's very big out there, you know, time, you know, like sometimes if there's something on, you've got to drive for like an hour and a half just to get there. That is, it's basically a need, not a want. So there was these little things out there that you sort of develop. And I think to sort of sum up that time out there, it very much broke me down, built me up again, and gives you a much more of a thankful side of life, which, you know, again, it was like the hardest thing and the best thing.
When did you go there?
So I sort of originally, my parents, I'd been traveling, and I'd kind of hit a point where I ran out of money traveling, and I was in this small town, and my parents were like, okay, well, it's up to you now to kind of figure it out. You know, we're the other side of the world. And pretty much from that point onwards, I had this idea. I was like, you know what? Because I was obviously traveling through, I'll just get a job here for like 3 or 4 weeks, and then I'll just keep on going back to Sydney. And obviously, I didn't like the idea of kind of asking people for help. So it was like I thought that's my best solution. And 1 month became 6 months, and 6 months became 12 months, and it was this thing where it was like a lot of really good things happened there. Like that's how I fell into real estate auctioneering. I made a $200 short film when I left that was a finalist at NBC Shorts Fest. A lot of things happened that, you know, it was just a very unique situation. Yeah. And I would put from day one to the end, it's all about growth out there. There was nothing but growth.
I mentioned this because I find it peculiar a little bit. Also, maybe you know the story of Matthew McConaughey, who also had a revelation year in Australia, and he wrote that book. Yep. I think it's Traffic Lights. I'm not good with titles, but I know what's in the book and in the movies. And I heard other people as well, after a period of isolation, because you had over 1 year of isolation, and that's a lot, or go crazy, or they have some revelations. And because afterwards, you pretty much won everything, all of the awards, the top awards in as an action year and also in movies. So in my mind, everything you put in your mind, you succeeded with afterwards. And it's a linkage there. So that isolation and solitude, I think that created something very deep in you that made you with such a growth mindset. I identified with the interview I saw through the interview.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way of putting it. When I was at acting school, they talked about, and this is like similar to what you're sort of saying. And I know the book you're talking about with Matthew McConaughey, but with the acting side of things, they talk about how, you know, let's say if you really want to be a good actor, like you talk about the top school in the world, like Juilliard or these, like, you know, Royal Shakespeare in London, you know, actors go in there when they're, you know, just starting out, whichever age they're at, and they go in and they've got a list of baggage, whether it be, you know, speech, voice, you know, emotionally, you know, can't really break down, whatever it is. And it's that thing of like, it's not just suddenly giving someone the keys to the car and saying, okay, well, like, I'll tell you everything. You know, sometimes there is a point where you've got to, you know, strip down all the bad habits and get to a place where you can then rebuild up from. And I think there's something in that, certainly with people as well, where they get to a place where, yes, they're asking for how do they get rich in business or how do they change this in their relationship. But there's also like an element where they need to take a step back and just strip away some of these bad habits they have. So then they can take on, obviously, these new tools, whether that be new tools in business, relationships, whatever their passion in his life. So I think that's a really interesting way that you brought that up about, yeah, being in isolation or being in a position where you can strip back and then go back and really, you know, go after what it is you're after.
And you mentioned several times exactly this, strip down or until you are back to basics. So this stripping down concept to you, what does it mean exactly?
Well, I think stripping down is a little bit also just getting rid of bad habits. And those bad habits could be laziness. They could be getting rid of things such as, you know, negativity or even just toxicity of like, I always seem to attract the wrong people is what some people might say. Because I think it's kind of goes hand in hand together. Like, for example, if someone says, hey, like, I want to be a personal trainer, but they're overweight, they've got to probably lose the weight first before they can advertise they're a personal trainer. So I think perhaps there's something, well, not perhaps, there is something in that idea of, obviously, if you're looking for self-growth, there's got to be a capacity that you can take on for growth. And maybe you've got to lose something, these bad habits, so that you can really excel with the growth.
How did you get to NIDA? Because this is one of those schools you are mentioning. I hope that I pronounce it correctly, or it's NIDA.
It's NIDA. Yeah,
it's NIDA. Okay,
how you call it? Yeah.
So it's the most prestigious school of acting in Sydney, Australia. So it's pretty much like what you mentioned, between the best schools in the world. And so, how did you get in?
Yeah, they have like a really annoying audition process. You've got to do like a round of auditions and another round. But when I did it, I only had to do one audition. And they're big group auditions as well. So it's like you go in like a cattle call and you're kind of like acting in front of other people, this huge hall of other people just for the audition. I feel like the audition is more kind of nerve-wracking than you know, any sort of real acting in life. So,
but I suppose they filter well who is talented, that was not, correct?
Yeah, it's everyone's going to have their own opinion in the creative industry. I feel, you know, whether it be schools, do you need to go to acting school? Do you don't? Do you need to go to film school? Do you don't? Just because, for example, you can look at, you know, Jessica Chastain, who's won an Oscar and great actress. She went to Juilliard. And then you've got the other end of the spectrum where you've got Nicole Kidman. She never went to an acting school. So it's, I think it's everyone's different, and it doesn't matter where you're at in life. You know, everyone's going to have a different journey. But for me, it was really good because it was one of those things that I love acting. I love creating stories. I love making movies. I love that. So I really enjoyed the idea of breaking a script down and then being able to, you know, learn how to put things, beat changes, acting techniques, voice, movement, all of those things. I enjoyed that. And it's been great.
And when did you study real estate?
Exactly the same time as NIDA. Yeah, straight out of high school. Yeah.
And then you had that sabbatical year plus. And then you wrote that short film.
Yeah. Yeah. So the timeline was high school, study, two things at once. I'd never recommend that. like if I had a choice, but it was fun. And then travel. And then out back. And so coming back to Sydney, you could say I'd done all that training and you know, after sort of a year and a half in the country, I'd done all that training. I'd had all that done. But I hadn't perhaps, you know, gone into it as much. And that's where the interesting thing is, and I always look at the irony in this is, so if I wasn't in the outback, and I didn't make that $200 short film, I probably never would have got into directing as well. The only reason why I directed that short film is because you're in this very tiny country town with nothing but wheat fields for, you know, acres and acres and acres. You can't really find like a local director or producer or, you know, sound engineer or audio mixer. So it was that thing where literally forcing me to pick up a new skill set. And it actually, you know, was one of the best things as well, because that was my idea of like, you know, I really enjoy directing and I'd love to do one or the other, you know, more in the future.
You know, I'm picking your mindset right now. That's why I'm creating this spot and timelines. So you went through sports. This cultivated your resilience, let's say, and competitiveness. Then you took two schools, not one. That was probably a rough period where you learned acting and real estate, correct?
Yeah, I think that was, yeah. And I think that was also my influence saying, hey, the acting isn't really a big deal in Australia. Like another career would probably be a good idea. And you know, I think it pushed me and it was great.
So you accumulated tons of information. You learned acting, and that transforms you as a person because you need to enter in all kind of characters and then just shake it off. And we can discuss this a little bit later. And also to find a new skill and learn about real estate, so business skills. And also here, I suppose that acting helped because as an auctioneer, and you are pretty much the creme de la creme in this regard now internationally, especially when it comes to luxury real estate. And so now it's even confusing. You are a Hollywood celebrity or you are an auctioneer celebrity around the world. So you have more kind of businesses and you are known for multiple fields. And this is very fascinating. So back here, you accumulated all this information and then just afterwards, poof, isolated yourself. For 1 year plus.
Yeah, unintentionally, I will say as well, at the time, it wasn't the plan.
Because of the circumstances, correct?
Exactly right, yeah. And circumstances, yeah.
Circumstances pushed you to go there. And after that isolation, I'm interested about that moment, that crucial moment that just said, hey, this is enough. Why did you say that? When did you say that? And when? Did you decide, okay, this is what I want to do. I do this short film for $200.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is, and kind of to kind of piece the story together for you, just so it makes a little bit more sense. So the auctioneering also started in the outback. That's how I fell into auctioneering. And one of the reasons why I stayed a little bit longer is, so I landed out there and took this job in real estate with the idea that I was not going to stay. I was just going to go there for a month. And because a job in real estate pays higher than, for example, working in hospitality or being a bartender or whatever it would have been. And like I said, I was at that point also where I didn't really feel comfortable asking, you know, for help in anything I did. I kind of was at that point where it's like, you know, I'm an adult, or, you know, I'm 23 years old or 22 years old, and I need to, I just didn't feel like I wanted to solve it myself, basically. So I went to this, this real estate company that was offering, and I said, yeah, sure. And they're like, oh, I don't know, James, like, you know, we're looking for someone who wants a career in real estate. I'm like, yeah, sure. Of course I do. And then that very first day I went to work for them. Like I said, I was in, intending not to work there for more than a month. They said, oh, look, there's this like auctioneer competition in Australia, and we're entering as many people in the office as we can to try and win it. And it was like the, I guess, the regional local, it was called the NAC competition. I said, of course, when is it? And they're like, oh, it's like 6 weeks away. I was planning on being out of there for anyway. 6 weeks came and I was still there, and I entered this competition while I was there. Again, it's called the NAC, and I won the division, and it was this thing where it was like I had a brief opportunity while I was there, because auctioneering is even smaller than the film industry, and there was an opportunity to do auctioneering and make pretty good money in this place. And so it was almost like I was like, I'll just stay a little bit longer. As I was accumulating, obviously, you know, some good savings. And at the same time, I was doing these competitions, because once you'd won one, you'd, you know, go on to state, and then state would go on to like more. And I remember I got to the final, and I still had no interest in really pursuing it, as far as I was just looking at this was a good thing. I can see, you know, 10 feet in front of me, and I'm on a good thing here for the next, you know, couple of months. And I remember realizing someone actually said, like, oh, it really looks like you don't care when you're out there. It's just so natural when you do an auctioneering, because everyone else is very straighty 180 and trying to over articulate words and just be these personas, I guess you could say. And I certainly had this idea of like, you know, who cares, you know, whatever. And that actually translated into the auctioneering competitions I was winning doing really well, because everyone just said, like, you're just so natural. And to me, it was like, yeah, because I'm going out there with nothing really riding on it. And it was at that point when I came runner-up in Australia that I was like, actually, I could do something with this. And when I came runner-up from Australia, there was actually, you know, quite a few job offers that came in from other places. And that's where I was like, okay, well, I need to progress. This is kind of like my day job right now. And my time here is ending. And it was at that point when I was like, oh, my time here is ending. It was almost like, okay, well, I also now want to get back into the film industry. So I want to get back into the, I've been here. And that's when I was like, okay, well, let's make a $200 short film. And like I said, and I've mentioned to you, that $200 short film just, you know, blew up overseas when it got into the NBC Shorts Fest. And I found myself almost like catching up in time, because I'd gone from, you know, being in the outback, not doing any film work, to signing a deal with NBC Universal and having these job offers with auctioneering basically there for me, which I thought was, yeah, it was a pretty interesting feeling, because like I said, I'd been very isolated. You know, there wasn't a lot of young people, you know, in the middle of there, but I had been developing a skill set.
How long did you filmed that short film?
That's a good question, actually. I would say probably, I think it's about 17 or 18 minutes. I'll have to look it up on IMDb again, but I'm pretty sure, because it was going back into 2012. I think we filmed for probably 2 half days, one night And then there was a day of doing just like what you call B-roll, or getting, you know, establishing shots just of the local landscape.
And now I wonder, comparing the two. So when you won the award and you became like a fresh star as an auctioneer and filming this, so two different professions, were you the same, detached and cool while filming this movie and then send it into the US, or you were more involved here in this?
With the film side, I feel like it's a little bit harder to fake it because there's just a couple more elements to it. Meaning auctioneer, it's like it's not a team sport. Like it's just you. Filmmaking is very much a team sport. So for example, you know, you have that idea of, you have like, you know, edits of the film, compose actors, you know, makeup artists. You really have to sort of collaborate with people. So I would definitely say I was probably more hands-on and more focused with the film, but maybe that's also because I was wearing five or six hats. You know, I was the writer, director, actor, producer, editor.
So you had no time to be anxious.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way of putting it. I think I was enjoying the process. I loved the idea that there was these new elements in the filmmaking process. I could get a chance of doing it, and. If I have a chance, I do not want to do more than one hat. It's just, I feel like it all goes back to that thing where sometimes if you want to get something done in business, like if you own a business and you, especially if you're starting out, you need to perhaps do three or four roles until the big cash money comes in. And then you can say, hey, I can get a sales assistant, or I can get, you know, a lead gen or a marketing person as well. So it was a nice process, a great workout. And it was interesting shooting that film. It was very interesting shooting that film.
Why do you think people freeze, or they just don't perform well when they want something so badly? Because you were at the opposite side as an auctioneer at the beginning.
Why? Well, I think it's the whole, once they get nervous or they overanalyze it, it's like the brain stops functioning as fast. You know, you get that horse, your throat gets tight, so your throat is very hoarse. And you also have that almost like, it's kind of like, I guess you could say, you know, you stop driving a car at 80 miles an hour and people start driving at 40 miles an hour because the other 40 is just going, being used up as nerves. And you know, again, probably the best term is, you know, getting inside your head.
It's all about mindset. Could you give us some tips for those who are very nervous, especially if they want to talk in front of a board or investors and they are super nervous and they want that money so badly or that approval, and how they could just align better from an expert or pro actor?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, because I think my best advice with anything like that is, I think you just have to cut it off at the head, meaning like little, you know, I'll practice speaking with your dog, or practice speaking, you know, like in front of the mirror. My best advice is, if you have to do a big boardroom meeting on, say, next Thursday, then that week, go and do a stand-up show on the Friday, or go and, if the boardroom's got 20 people in it, go and do a speech in front of 150 people. And it's almost like you've stretched yourself so much that by the time you do that boardroom meeting, 20 people means nothing. It's that thing of, I think, if you're nervous about speaking to someone, don't just practice speaking in front of someone. You can just cut the whole thing out. Just speak in front of three times as many people, and then you're good to go.
That's a very cool idea and interesting. But if you don't have those 300 people, or it's something so like from one day to another, it's an emergency meeting tomorrow and you need to present something and you were not ready and you were not prepared and you are freaking out.
Yeah, I think if you're in that position where, again, like if it's tomorrow and you're sort of freaking out, my best advice is just breathe, you know, look up breathing exercises, because that is one thing you can control. Get yourself very centered. So when I say like get yourself breathing, and that's one thing you control, you know, you can't control the weather, you can't control what people are saying behind you, you can't, you know, you can't control that. But if you just stop and focus on like breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, after three or four of just focusing on that, you've, even if you don't feel it subconsciously, you've slowly started to kind of like take back the environment. I definitely mention try and if you're nervous, just try and write down the stakes. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, it's not, you know, it's not a big deal in the future, more than likely. It's maybe just that thing of, is it comfort or growth? Like, would you prefer to have the opportunity to be speaking in front of the boardroom? Or would you prefer to be comfortable in being a lower position, but you never have to speak? I think everyone would be like, look, I'd prefer to be a little bit uncomfortable if it means more money, more whatever it is. And so just accept that it's growth, and, you know, you can always do better the next time. And own it. I would just own it. Yeah.
Do you have, I suppose you have board meetings because you are part of several boards. So did you face such situations when you had something to maybe present and you just thought that maybe they won't go with it, and you needed to use more persuasion and some extra talent to pursue others? Do you have some such memories and something to share? What did you do?
That's a great question. I think I was I was very lucky, like having NIDA and then auctioneering to kind of get comfortable speaking with people, because there was thousands of auctions and you have people shouting at you saying things like, you know, hurry up, pass it in, why aren't you selling it? I'll give you $10 instead of, you know, a rise of 100,000. So you get used to that in the moment. And I think with NIDA, that obviously, you know, acting school definitely sort of like teaches you about how to be centered and speak properly. So I think I was very fortunate to cut that out. Where I've found I've probably been in a high pressure situation is just being not prepared. Like if I've had to make a presentation or, you know, I've suddenly been told, oh, like, you know, did you do this, you know, in a large meeting? That's when I've probably gone, okay, well, I need to actually bring content to what I'm talking about. So that's probably a something that I think I've experienced a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely times, you know, it's always more nerve-wracking the thought of doing something than what it really is. Like when I talk about, you talk about mindset and people obviously having a good mindset. When I said, you know, what would you recommend for someone, you know, going and having to do a speech tomorrow? What is your mindset? Like, are you putting the stakes on this speech like it's life or death? And if you don't do a good speech, then you lose your job? Or is the mindset just more, this is uncomfortable, I really don't want to have to do it, but you know what? Worst case scenario, if my speech doesn't go to plan, I'm still going to have a job. I'm still going to be in a winning position. And there's bigger things. So I think just not letting the stakes be greater than they are in your mindset when you're going to do it. And that's, you know, that's just obviously something you can win in life if you can keep pushing that sort of narrative and not overcomplicating things.
Yeah, so basically to have a bigger perspective, this is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, and to put things into perspective. Mm-hmm. So don't put extra pressure on yourself if you don't need to.
Perfect. Thank you. You know, about breathing, I just had a live on LinkedIn last week about this, and I shared that it's the quickest way to just balance your mood, because it's connected with your autonomic nervous system. And so everything just clicks sooner than any other method. But yeah, I would love to ask you, do you meditate?
I have in the past. It's a very bad excuse, but like I have struggled with time and also the amount of travel, which is not good, because I know you can say you're sitting on the plane, all those things, but I have in the past. The technique that I really would recommend is one called the Alexander technique, which is great for a lot of it comes to both breathing and also like just posture and how you can obviously get the most out of things. So that was, I learned that early on. During the acting school days, and that has been something which I remember the teacher came in on the first day and I thought he was absolutely crazy. I was like, this guy is just like, he's off the wall. And he started saying things like, next time you're out at a bar, I want you to look at the posture of people and you'll see someone that's got good posture who can breathe and this. And he was absolutely right. I mean, you really do see it, it goes down to obviously, you know, getting diving deeper into things like body language. But, you know, good posture means good breathing, and good breathing means, you know, clearer thinking, you know, healthier. It all kind of links together. And it's, I think, yeah, if you can work on that, you can see an extra 2-4% whatever job, whatever field you have.
I love that so much. I even forgot. So I talked about breathing, posture, and meditation. And now you complete it with your own words, bringing some new elements. And especially because not those who are listening the podcast are also available to see that LinkedIn. So it's so great to have this information together and also coming from you, because these are truly crucial elements that can just improve our life and very, very quickly. Okay, yeah. So back to mindset. What do you think that it's the best mental skill you learned as an auctioneer?
The best skill?
Mental skill. Or skill.
I would probably say the skills that stand out the most. I'm not sure which one is the absolute best. I think the top three skills would definitely be there's an element obviously of discipline. I think you have to be disciplined, and when I say disciplined, I mean obviously with auctioneering, especially with luxury properties, it's not about you, it's about the property. And a lot of auctioneers and, you know, people in life, you know, take a job and they make it all about themselves. When I talk about discipline, it's about the fact that you're selling someone else's asset, and that other person knows the property better than you'll ever know, because they lived in it. They lived in it for, you know, 10, 25 years. And when you sell the property, you're selling the property. You're not being like a wedding MC. You're not being a stand-up comedian. You're not being somebody that's, just wanting to be the center of attention. And the whole auction is not about the auction. It's about the property, protecting the property, getting the best price for the property. So when I talk about that discipline side to it, it's about being disciplined where you can actually lock in, focus on a property, take instructions from other people, and not ever get into that point where you start making it all about yourself. Because like I said, you know, you see a lot of people in any sort of field, they get complacent or they think, I know what to do. I've sold like 1,000 auctions. I don't need to take, you know, advice from you. It's that other side to it, which is very much like staying disciplined. What is the goal? What is the focus? And I think that's been something that's worked really well. Other things, look, there's been a lot of confidence. It's good for public speaking. It really increases your math, especially when someone says, I'll give you $29,500. And then someone else says, I'll give you $42,500 on top of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And what's the best skill you think you learned for life from acting?
That is a really good question. The best skill, there's a lot of skills. With the acting, I think you can dive a lot deeper than the auctioneering, because essentially you're learning about yourself in a way that other professions don't allow. So, for example, you make a ton of money in finance and it's very analytical, and you have to be very smart to be in finance. But it doesn't really like ask you to figure out, you know, what do you really want in life? You know, what are your sensations? Are you a visual person? You know, what are your habits? You know, what's your emotional capacity in different situations? And you've got to ask those questions as an actor, because whatever role you're playing, you have to get out of you and into them. And I think it's with acting, that's a long conversation, because yeah, you can dive very deep or you can stay on the surface. It's up to you. But there's a lot of growth to happen when you're being an actor.
Again, growth. I like that. So you did have the pragmatic approach and also the human approach, because you need to blend yourself with characters, and this can like dissipate all of your parts, and then you need to recreate yourself over and over again and then shake it down. And so I believe this is also dangerous, but it's also part of you and why you are a complex personality, adding all of the other details, right?
Yeah, I think I've been, I don't think it's been the funnest way, but I think there's been elements where I've been forced to push into a business because in Australia it's not as creative as, say, Los Angeles. And that's probably where I think studying real estate and you know, going and learning about, you know, obviously studying business and real estate helped from the start. But having that side of it, and then the acting is very much a creative industry. So when you're in other cities such as Los Angeles, where it's very much a creative field, being allowed to stretch those skills from acting school and, you know, mixing that with time in the country, you know, time where I've been around some really good people, both in business and in the creative space, and wanted to learn from them. You know, it's been nice to kind of be able to, yeah, put my hand in a few different pies.
What's your why behind growth, learning, and development? These are your three words used often. And because of also what I learned from Malibu Crush, and that you took all of those roles upon your head, and that you enjoy this, because even if it's hard, you truly enjoy the process, and it's almost like a fascination for you. So I'm very curious, what's the why behind these three? Growth, learning, development.
Okay, so there's a really, really famous NFL player that I spent a bit of time with from time to time in America. And I don't want to name him because that'll just sound like I'm name dropping, but he's a quarterback. And he said to me one time, which was really interesting, he was talking about the offseason. He's like, if you put $10 in, you get $10 out. And if you put $1,000 in, you get $1,000 out. And what he was referring to is you know, whatever training he does for that week, if he just does the bare minimum, you know, he shows up when he's told to show up and he leaves as soon as he's shown to leave, then he's going to basically take home technically, you know, minimum, show up, ship out. If you start putting more time in, that's when you start getting more. And I think for me, that's the real reward in life. Like if I want to put, you know, $10,000 in next week as an analogy to, you know, effort, time, learning, whatever it is, I will get $10,000 out. And that feels really, really good. People talk about the idea of, oh, I can't wait to retire, or, you know, this is the life, sitting on a beach. And I've had a little bit of that, where it's like, you know, you sit at a beach and it's fun for like 3 hours, 4 hours. But to think that you just do that every single day kind of goes back to what I was talking about, where if you put $10 in, you get $10 out. If you just lie at a beach for a week, then 3 weeks, then 4 weeks, you know, it's not very healthy for your body. Your mind starts slowing down, technically, not critically thinking. You can't feel the same sensation after 4 weeks of lying on a beach thinking, oh, this is paradise, as you did for the first couple of days. So I think it's that I love the chase of finding these new areas to grow, putting $1,000 in instead of $100 in each week, or the analogy, and having that reward. Like it comes, like there's always a reaction for anything you do, and hard work always has a reaction, even if you can't see it from the way you wanted. So I think that's, for me, that's the best part about life. The more you grow, the more actual reward you get.
I love so much what you said. You basically gave a short lecture about long-term thinking and the compound effect and the magic that can happen with it. And this could explain a lot of your successes, no matter what domain you want to pursue. And so now a little bit a sensitive question. You know, I work with founders and entrepreneurs and C-level executives. And when it comes to entrepreneurship, especially, there is a lot of mental health issues, even if they don't accept it, or they accept it too late because they focus on traction, on sales, on funding, and other issues. But basically, it's a huge issue. And there is a research done by UC Berkeley where they found, and it's a recent one, 72 out of 100 entrepreneurs have mental health issues. So they are a risk group. And so I'm wondering now, and people start to talk about this, but it's still a stigma, you know, and people hide that they are depressive or they have such moments or anxiety. Did you face any time any kind of mental health issues?
I haven't gone down. I mean, I know people that have. I've got someone actually who's quite close to me. He's in the exact same space you said. You know, he's in a tech startup and he has that roller coaster of like very, 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 very big highs and then, you know, almost like holding your breath lows and then back up to the really big highs. I haven't had that. But what I can say is that I probably have had to learn about myself in order to get the peak performance out of myself, if that makes sense. So, for example, learning not to get stressed at certain things or learning to put things into perspective, you know, learning to identify what time I do my best work, all these things that I know they're a little bit of a shift away from mental health, but I think it's that same idea of like taking care of yourself or looking a little bit inwards about how you operate as a person, because it's the same thing. Some people are visual, some people are analytical. So, you know, if you can't identify which one you are, you might be wasting, you know, 80% of your energy stressing yourself out. You know, why can't I retain information? Oh, it's because I'm actually visual. I should start doing more of these things in my work. So I think it's looking inwards that has really helped me.
Great. Now we switch gears to humor. What do you think is the role of humor in your life? Because I ask this, of course, because you were stimulated and inspired by Dumb and Dumber. This is one of your favorite movies by Jim Carrey.
Yes.
Yes. And it was also part of inspiration for Malibu Crush. So, but it's a goofy kind of comedy. And you do have all of these facets of yours, but you do like this goofy comedy and you want to continue doing such movies. So what do you think is the role of humor in your life or the part that shapes James from the humorous part and also how it helps?
Yeah. And to quickly like kind of make that make sense. So the writers of Dumb and Dumber, Peter and Bobby Farley, also did some of my other favorite films like Shallow Hal, Something About Mary, Hall Pass. That's their kind of wheelhouse as far as they do a rom-com, which is very stupid. And then they bring it up to make it a little bit more intelligent because they always bring a female love interest in that's just the most intelligent one in the room. Without that female love interest, it's like Jim Carrey and Dumb and Dumber just going like, like open slather. But I love what they do. I love the way that they write. And to me, that's probably something that's missing from the world as well. You know, the world is quite tightly wound up at the moment. Everyone seems very sensitive about something, whatever it is. And humor, the role of humor for me is, you know, it's essential. I mean, I would prefer to see a really goofy, stupid comedy that gives me an hour and a half of laughing than an hour and a half of a movie that's, you know, trying to tell you this and it's trying to tell you that and it's got a political angle and it doesn't have a political angle and it's just something where you leave and you go, I'm not better off after watching that than I was an hour and a half ago.
Great moment now for you to give a shout out for Malibu Crush. And no matter if you are a founder, a tech founder and scaling and entrepreneur with tons of things to do, it's a good moment to just detach yourself. And because of what James said before, to have that kind of moment where you just forget about any kind of problem and you rebalance your mental state through good humor. So please shout out about your movie.
Yeah, I would encourage anyone that like Dumb and Dumber, who wants love, to check out Malibu Crush. The premises are two guys that have done nothing since high school. The opening scene of these guys, you'll see one of them spraying an old lady in the face with a fire extinguisher and the other guy is ordering a pizza on the couch surrounded by trash. They really haven't done much with their life and they have this like their intelligence level is not very high. And they have this idea that this girl that one of them dated for 3 weeks in high school still likes him. So they go to Sydney, Australia in search of this girl, and they ruin, I won't give it away, but basically they ruin all the relationships they have in Australia. You know, they run off of people with golf carts. They shoot a terrible TV commercial. They send another person to hospital, and they finally meet this girl at the end. And you'll have to watch the movie to see her reaction when they see, yeah, when they meet again after 8 years of high school.
I really love the way you described, and I can see how excited, passionate, and proud you are, because you involved yourself in all roles for this movie during COVID, and it was not easy for you. And I wish you the best of success. Already you have awards for this movie for the during this entire year, and it continues, like you just had another one. And I invite everyone to watch it and just have some real fun. And before you share where people can find you, I have a final question. If I would be your genie and I could give you all the money and influence in the world, what would you do with it?
I would take a time out for kind of like going into the country. I'd take a time out and really evaluate the situation and then go back into this, you know, let's say the city, the area, with what I'm going to do with the time and the money, rather than just make a quick decision or whatever my, I guess you could say, my emotional needs were telling me at the time I need. I would want to step back, evaluate, and then go back and make an executive decision.
That's such a great suggestion. Before great big decisions, to just get some time off and also go introspect and put all elements together, because you do have all the money and the influence, and you should be wise enough to do something, because you know that you can impact millions or even the entire globe. Thank you.
Right, right. Yeah.
Where can people find you?
Reach out anytime on social media. It's James_Pratt7 on Instagram. It's the same on Twitter, James_Pratt7, James Pratt Official on YouTube, and James Pratt 7 on LinkedIn.
This was a real pleasure, James, and I wish you the best of luck for all of your projects this year and now with your movie. And I hope maybe we will have a second round later this year or next year.
I'd love to. And thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat with me. I really appreciate it. Good questions.
Thank you.
Subscribe to Christina's podcast and stay connected through her social media channels too.